Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are not back in our studio inside Renaissance Bank in Alpharetta. We're getting closer, so stay tuned. But in the meantime, the folks at Renaissance are doing a great job with small business customers, particularly the ones, here's the deal, folks. If you like computer-generated voices and you like calling up your bank and getting a phone tree and not being able to get to a live person, then don't go to Renaissance, okay? But if you're tired of all that stuff and you want to like talk to a real person and deal with a real banker, then go to Renaissance. RenaissanceBank.com, find their local office, give them a call, and you can actually go in and set up an appointment to go in and see them. Imagine that. But they're big enough to be able to pretty much handle any need you can throw at them, and they've got the technology that you need for your small business. So it's a good mix. I found that with my clients and myself, and I think you'll find it as well. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. Now, speaking of getting back to the office, Kaleem Clarkson has joined us, and Kaleem is the Chief Operating Officer at BlendMe, Inc. Kaleem, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really, really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
I've been looking forward to this, Kaleem, so thank you for taking the time to be with us. You are a remote working expert. Tell folks a little more about how you're serving companies out there.
Well, John, yeah, I like that. Remote work expert. That's awesome. I guess I consider myself a lifelong learner. You can always learn more and more and more. So it is kind of funny kind of hearing the word expert. But yeah, I definitely fall into that category. But plain and simple, BlendMe Inc., we help startups and small businesses improve the remote employee experience. So the remote employee experience consists of it's kind of like the employee life cycle. And it starts from the day somebody views your job ad to hiring, to onboarding, to engagement, to training, performance reviews, and then offboarding. So it's kind of like that whole employee life cycle. So we help organizations, startups, and small businesses improve that remote employee experience.
Now, we were chatting about this before we came on the air. You've been at this a while. So this is not something that just popped up during a pandemic as a way to pivot to a new business. We heard the word pivot for a while. You've been at this for a while. Talk more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with new experts coming out. Sure. That's what's great about, innovation. Mm-hmm. So, but we kind of put ourselves a little bit in that. We call ourselves the OG crowd of remote work. we incorporated in 2013. I guess I'll tell you a little bit about our story. My partner and I were both from the state of Maine. That's right. State of Maine, representing the 207. And we moved down to Atlanta, Georgia in 2008. And my partner, she got her master's degree, the CEO, Jennifer Cameron. She's the CEO of BlendMe Inc. She got her master's degree in organizational development and human resources from the University of Connecticut. So during probably 2009, she graduated in 2010, and I would say in 2012 I was doing some web development, got a chance to fly out to a conference called DrupalCon Denver, and I got a chance to listen to the CEO of a company called Lullabot speak. And at that time, Lullabot's clients are like the Grammys, they built they big they're a big company. They build really big websites like the Grammys. And he was talking about how they are a distributed company. And I never really had heard that term before. Mm. Right? He's like, oh, we're fully distributed. And what he talked about in that discussion was that they didn't want to consider themselves a virtual company, because then, you know, large clients like the Grammys, you know, like they didn't want their clients to think that they weren't real, because it kind of gave off a, you know, we're not real, we're virtual. So they didn't want to use the word virtual, but then they didn't want to use the word remote because it made their employees feel distant. And I really found that fascinating. So flew back to Atlanta after that conference, started reading book remote, started reading The Year Without Pants, The 4-Hour Work Week. And it was really then when I kind of realized, you know, I spoke to Jennifer about it and I was like, you know, remote work is fascinating. You know, there's a lot of, again, I was kind of in I'm still involved with the Drupal community's open source web development tool, kind of like WordPress. And a lot of the Drupal companies were already remote. So I do have to admit a lot of my expertise comes from a group of people, the Drupal community, and a group of people that have been doing remote work for much longer than I've been involved. But I've been able to take the lessons I've learned from there and help other small businesses. So, you know, we kind of looked at it and I said, hey, why don't we start our own company, HR consulting, internal marketing company for remote companies only. So that's what we did. At the time, it probably, you know, handicapped us a little bit, and we weren't able to get as many clients as we wanted, because remote work was kind of like this, I don't know, folklore thing. Like, no one really thought it was real. Like, sure, you work from home in your bathroom. Sure, that's true.
Right.
But I think I can say confidently that the whole planet has a different view on remote work now. So yeah.
That's the story. That's clear at this point. That's for sure. Whether they want to have a new one or not, they've got one, right? So how do you assess the remote employee experience right now? Wow. What does that look like?
That's a great question. So, you know, the employee experience is something that's been researched, and if everyone listening, you can go out there and find plenty of information on what the employee experience is all about. And again, it was very, very similar to the things I talked about earlier. But at Blend, we were just kind of looking at it and we were thinking, well, we got to have something, you know, a little unique. You know, we just don't want to recite what everyone's saying. We kind of just thought about, are there any things unique to remote work versus a co-located company or brick and mortar? And I mean, honestly, there really kind of is it, because you can apply the principles on both sides, right? Like, you just want to have a great culture and a great place to work. But what we realized, what we found, is that there are two important philosophies, two pillar philosophies that it takes to implement remote work well. And the first one is trust. You know, as soon as we went remote, how many organizations were Googling? If you look at the Google search results, how many organizations started Googling remote work monitoring, or monitoring my employees while working remotely?
Right.
Like, software to monitor whether my employees are working. So yeah, that's not what we would call a trust culture. So trust is critical, right? You have to trust, as an employer, you have to trust that your employees are going to get the job done. And you actually have to start with that trust. Yes, we all understand that, you know, trust is earned, that how that phrase goes, but you actually have to kind of assume trust in a remote workspace. And then as the employee, right, like, you have to trust within the employer that they're going to actually follow through on what they said during your interviews and what they have posted on their website, and whether they're going to follow through on the mission and vision. So trust is, you know, reciprocal. There it is. The word I was kind of searching for. It goes both ways. And then the second piece is responsibility. We thought about this a lot, and basically, again, the employer, organization has to be responsible in the fact of they need to make sure that the employee has everything that they need. They need to make sure that the employee has a good at-home workspace. If that employee doesn't have a good workspace, they need to ensure that they can give them a co-working allowance where they can go somewhere and actually get work done. So there's some responsibility on the employer. And again, you know, resources to get the job done correctly, right? No different than being in the office. But then you also have responsibility on the employee, right? The employee has to raise their hand when they have a question. The employee has to reach out to the manager when something doesn't seem right. The employee, when they're feeling disconnected, has to take on a little bit of the response, has to take on the responsibility of being connected. So we decided to come up with, and the reason why I explained trust and responsibility is we came up with our own assessment called TREE, the remote employee experience. So you can go to our website, fill out our assessment. It's only takes a few minutes. And it's just some basic questions. And then you'll get kind of like a score. After you fill it out, we'll send you an email with the score and a little PDF explaining kind of where your remote employee experience is at that moment. So yeah, that's how we assess the remote employee experience.
Folks, we're here chatting with Kaleem Clarkson, and Kaleem is the Chief Operating Officer at BlendMe. You know, Kaleem, I'm curious about how you, and I know this is a very general question and it applies differently to different companies, but just in general, mm-hmm. I mean, how prepared were companies for the trust and the responsibility metrics that you see are so critical to a successful remote work experience?
Not very. Okay. Not very prepared. And I guess, again, that's a huge generalization, right?
Like, yeah, sure.
Obviously, there are organizations who had already adopted workplace flexibility and some sort of remote work. I know certain government agencies have been doing this for a while. United States Trade Association, USP, like PTO, I think. And even in Georgia, you know, Georgia has a telework policy. So yeah, of course there were organizations that were prepared, but a majority, especially in the small business to medium business market, not prepared at all. And the reason why is that establishing a trust first culture and establishing that responsibility takes a lot of work, right? It takes a lot of intentionality, and it takes you away from your quote unquote direct revenue generating business task. I say direct because everything has, you know, that's our job to attach everything to a business outcome, but everything isn't 100% direct. So yeah, most organizations, and even today, you know, most organizations just try to copy what they were doing every single day in the office on Zoom. And that's actually why we've heard so much about Zoom fatigue and disconnectedness and stuff like that. But yeah, very unprepared. I would say, you know, 80% of companies were not prepared.
You just touched on something that I think is a great point, and I want to make sure that I got that, and I want to make sure to amplify it if I did. What I'm hearing you say is that Zoom fatigue results from companies that have not prepared a trust culture because they're trying to recreate that office environment and keep people on Zoom longer than they really should and ought to.
You are, John, I mean, you hit it right on the head, John. That's exactly it. And the really, really, you know, I'm not trying to, of course, I'm jaded. You're right. I'm biased, right? Remote work is going to save the world, in my opinion.
Of course. It's the answer to world peace, right? Yeah.
It can solve all our problems, right? But at the same time, if you ask yourself, well, it worked in the office. I think a deeper question you got to ask is, did you have a trust culture before? You know, because did you need all those meetings before? What were the real purpose of those meetings? Even in, we're talking about in office. So yeah, trying to copy that. And I think now that you have Zoom, I think in an office meeting, you can kind of, I don't know, kind of float and just be present. And you being present is enough for a lot of those meetings, but it's a little different on Zoom. Like, you know, you're right, your face is right there and the questions are direct. And, you know, people can kind of tell when you're clicking on other stuff and doing other things. Mm-hmm. So you are correct. If you're having Zoom fatigue, back to your statement, there's a good chance that the reason why there is Zoom fatigue is that you have not establish an intentionality of how you're going to do things. Therefore, you have to have all these meetings in place. So you're absolutely correct.
So what we're talking about here, it seems to me, and again, correct me if I've got this wrong, but it sounds like companies were not prepared for this trust and responsibility culture, and therefore you have to apply triage to a company's way of doing business and their culture. Is that accurately describe what it is you help companies do?
Yeah. Could you explain a little bit? Can you go a little bit deeper into your explanation of the triage? I want you to go a little deeper.
Well, if they're not
response for that question.
Yeah, sure. So if they're not prepared for the trust and responsibility culture that they need to have, mm-hmm. a culture that's seeped in trust and responsibility, let's put it like that. Right. If they're not prepared for that going into an environment like what we now have, and suddenly those qualities are at a premium for success with a remote employee experience, then triage has to be applied, right? I mean, suddenly you're having to work on this problem while doing business at the same time.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. You're absolutely correct. So I think the most difficult part for any organization is to justify stopping their daily, you know, tasks that they're used to that generate revenue and prioritizing process. You know, it's very hard, especially for small businesses. Large companies get this, you know, like I think government organizations have a much better grasp on this than what people give credit for. Because there's a reason why there's so much red tape. People are like, oh, there's so much red tape with government. Well, there's a reason why there's red tape. Somebody did something bad, and they're like, well, let's put some tape down that's red to prevent that from happening again.
Right.
I mean, it's literally like, I love listening to people talk, well, I don't want to work in government. It's too much red tape. Well, yeah. I'm not going to discredit that, but there is a reason for that, right? There's a reason for that policy. With smaller businesses, especially with family-owned businesses and businesses who are run by the owners and stuff like that, it's really, really hard for them to come out of their head and say, hey, it's not saying that you were doing something wrong. I feel like that's the biggest challenge, especially, you know, as a consultant. Hey, we don't have, coaches, whatever you want to call it, business coach, consultant. That's the biggest challenge that we have. And the challenge is saying, look, I'm not saying you were doing it wrong. You were doing it. You were doing your business, and you know your business better than I do. Like, and I feel like that's the biggest, you know, misconception when you're talking about consultants or you're talking about coaches. We're not content matter experts in your business. We are process experts. Your business is unique, but your process is not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So therefore, what we're doing is we're saying, hey, look, you've gotten by on grit, industry knowledge, whatever it is, your uniqueness, and you're making money. That's fine. But I need you to come over here and we need to talk about how your, what your processes are set up like. So do you have a wiki that people can get access to the information? Can people access information no matter where they are? Okay. Do you have a policy in place for, are you measuring OKRs? You know, a lot of people understand measuring KPIs, key performance indicators, but a lot of people don't measure OKRs, which are objectives and key results. And how those are a little bit different are how we kind of look at it are, look at what it is that's successful in that position or role or whatever. And what are the common traits? What are the common things that are done by that in that role that leads to success? So for example, in my opinion, and of course this is, everyone has their own opinions on this, but like a salesperson, right? A KPI to me is your sales numbers. It's just plain black and white there. But an OKR might be number of sales calls. Like we figured out that if you make X amount of sales calls, that will work well. So to me, we kind of separate those things. So trying to be able to convince a leader, especially a business owner, to prioritize the process is really, really difficult. And that's what you need to kind of establish trust and establish responsibility.
Well, what you're talking about is the difference between indicators that are prescriptive versus descriptive, right? Prescriptive meaning that they lead to a certain outcome depending on the level of success that you get in hitting that objective or that metric, I should say. Descriptive means it's after the fact. It's too late by then, right? I mean, right. So that's what you're talking about is.
I love that description. I'm stealing that too, John.
Okay. Well, I'll feel free, pal. That's what we're here for is share
lifelong
ideas.
Lifelong learning.
Yeah.
That's what that's called.
Yeah. So, yeah, which makes a lot of sense. And I could keep going down this bunny trail, but I want to get back to one thing. Because I know people want to hear.
Yeah.
And I know they want to hear it because I hadn't even brought it up, but when I bring it up, they'll want to hear it. So we were talking before we came on about a fundamental problem that exists right now, which is a tension that exists between the typical employee and how they see the future of remote work. Okay. Versus the companies themselves and what they are expecting. So why don't you describe the findings that you're seeing in terms of surveys that have been done, describe that tension and then how you see how you see that playing out.
Oh yeah. I love this conversation. This is probably, it's really riveting and it's really exciting because I don't know what's going to happen. And the tension that you're talking about, John, is the idea of what employees want moving forward from remote work and workplace flexibility, again, versus what employers want or going to offer. And I think we have to really understand from a idea of so many employees never had the opportunity to experience workplace flexibility using remote work. And now we all have. Mind you, we are in the middle of pandemic, so I will get to that in one second. I do have to get on my soapbox for a quick second. Right now is not, and any of you have heard me talk have heard this. Right now, I'm going to look into the camera for emphasis as well. Right now during the pandemic is not the right time to judge remote work. And let me just say that one more time. During the pandemic is not the right time to judge whether you enjoy remote working. And the reason why that is because you need social connections. So we're tribal species. We need to be around other humans. You know, we're not like the hedgehog when I'm out with my daughter watching cartoons. So we have to be able to be around people. Mm. I love being around people. I like to high five and a hug after a few beverages. I'm sitting here moving my hands. We like to be around people. So this is not the time. Normally I go to co-working spots. Normally I go to coffee spots. There are ways to fill in the gaps that you're feeling from remote work. But right now we can't fill in those gaps. So if you're feeling some kind of way right now about remote work and you're new to this, you're not alone. And there's some of us who've been working remotely for 20 years. So just kind of a PSA. But back to the tension that you're talking about. What is going to happen after the pandemic is over? What is going to happen when leadership says you must return back to the office? Back to the office is required. And that question and that statement is fascinating to me. So I just want to show some stats real quick. A 2021 state of remote work. I love Buffer, by the way. They've been doing the state of remote work since 2017. So go ahead and Google state of the remote work 2021. They do this survey every single year. And this question, just listen to this question and listen to the stats. Would you like to work remotely at least some of the time for the rest of your career? One more time. Would you like to work remotely at least some of the time for the rest of your career? And what that means is, you know, working remotely once, twice, there's no numbers on it. It's not necessarily every day. But 97.6% said yes. 97.6% said yes. I want to work remotely at least some of the time for the rest of my career, not just tomorrow. But then further down in the research, they ask, is your company planning on permanently allowing remote work? One more time. Is your company planning on permanently allowing remote work? 46% said yes. So that's pretty decent. But 38%, they don't know. And then 16% said no. Just we're not going to offer it. So what you're seeing right here, we're talking about establishing trust. And we what a trust culture is. And there are a whole bunch of different ways to establish trust. And what we talk about, number one, is ask your employees what they want is like number one in trust. And then, you know, provide some sort of plan or some sort of action based on that feedback. Well, this is obviously not trustworthy. Like if I'm an employee and I mean, the stats are right there showing you 96% of the employees want to work remotely, but only 46% said yes. And 52% or 54% either don't know. Basically, they're trying to figure out how to articulate that. Or 16% said no. So it's just, to me, that's the most interesting and something that we probably haven't seen in the history, probably since going way back to, I don't know, Industrial Revolution. Like right now, employees, there's a sense of workplace flexibility is no longer a perk. I think from this point on, it's going to be an expectation. So, you know, when we talk about a small business owner, hey, roll up your sleeves, hard work. Everybody's coming back to the office. You really, really, really should pause and think about that. Because if you are in a business that has a competitor, which we all do, mm-hmm. there's going to be a really, really good chance that your competitor is going to offer workplace flexibility. And maybe some of your employees won't leave, but let me tell you, they're looking on their lunch break, especially in Atlanta. I mean, we know how traffic is here. Trust me, that person that drives in on that first day, I just can't wait. I can't wait until the pandemic is declared officially over and all these, and we see on social media, all the requirements of people saying you must come back to the office. But then the biggest piece is going to be, what is leadership going to use for reasoning? Like, if your business is afloat today and made it through this pandemic, you innovated. You did something to last through this challenge. There's a good chance you implemented some form of workplace flexibility. So what are you going to tell your top performers? No, you've been performing for what? What are we on? Oh, we're going to get ready to be on month 12 very soon. You know,
sure.
12.
Right.
And based on, you know, where we're heading, it's probably going to be about 18, you know, 16, 18 months, probably before people actually start requiring that. So what are you going to say as a leader? It's really fascinating. Really fascinating.
So let's talk to probably not any point in talking to those that are pretty much decided they're going to have everybody come back to work, because they're like command and control people. Let's talk to the people that know things have changed and might be interested in engaging you and your firm for the work that you do. They're confused. They don't know what to do. Like you say, there's that percentage of don't know is a big one. I don't know what I'm going to do. Yeah. So
38%, that's a big chunk.
That's a big chunk. So let's talk to those folks that don't know. How do you go about assessing what it is they need to do in the go forward post pandemic period with remote work?
Yeah, that's, John, I actually think that that's probably the most important question in this so far that we've talked about. It's by far the most important question, because there are different remote work models. There are multiple models. And you have to do your homework to ensure that you're implementing the model that's going to work best for your business and also for your employees, right? So in order to do that, there is, you have to get data. So we are, you know, I know we're a people operations company. We provide fractional people operations for small businesses. If you can't afford having a director of remote work, we can serve in that capacity. And we also can work on projects as well. So, but people operations, we use data. You got to use data to back up what it is that you're going to do for what it is you're going to implement. And so the first thing that we always say is you have to ask your employees. You have to find out what type of flexibility they need. So, for example, when we're in North Fulton County, right? Like somebody who's in Sandy Springs, Alpharetta, Milton, right? If they're and their office might be, for example, in Midtown, for example, but they have a huge population that's coming from the north, or vice versa. Your office is in Alpharetta. Alpharetta's traffic's pretty intense. If your employees all live in one area, there may be a different model, maybe better. So again, what I would suggest is you have to kind of survey your employees to determine the type of flexibility that they want. Some people want to go into the office. That's another thing that we haven't really talked about too much. Again, I'm a little biased. Remote work is going to save the world. But there's a population that's just more productive in an office. They enjoy the commute. They enjoy being able to switch off and get into remote work. Maybe their home environment's distracting.
Sure.
Some people may be more effective in the office.
Sure.
So I would suggest checking out, there's this company called Work Labs, WERKLABS. And what they offer is it's kind of like a Myers-Briggs or personality test for remote work. What that is, the research they've done on this is absolutely amazing. It was founded by Annie Dean and Nan, I can't say her last name. I'm blanking on her last name, but they sold the company to the Mom Project. But they did this huge research project, and it's in the Harvard Business Review. We can put it in the show notes. But they did this research project, and they realized that companies, and again, the disconnect and the friction, they realized that companies, organizations had a different definition of what workplace flexibility was versus what employees thought. So they started off disconnected. So in order for you to take the train in the same direction, you all have to be on the same train track. So they created this assessment to categorize each different types of workplace flexibility. For example, some people may need a schedule shift. They need the ability to work at night because homeschooling, we all kind of took that on, you know, some of us more than others. And then we have the summer coming up, right? So I'm sure a lot of camps probably aren't going to be in play. Mm-hmm. So here in Georgia, for some of you that don't know who are listening outside of Georgia, our schools are, they're going to school, but they have to wear masks. But in the summertime, we're going to be back to figuring out what are we going to do with our young ones all day. So schedule shift might be the type of flexibility that someone needs. And then maybe someone else needs, a different workplace here and there, like a different place to work. So again, that's called work labs. And what that does is it just, again, gives you an idea, gives you kind of like a common definition of the types of remote work. Survey your company, determine what the percentages are, and then start looking at how you're going to implement that piece. So sorry, that was kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but I definitely wanted to give people that resource, and you have to actually ask your employees first before you begin planning your implementation.
Sure. Now, I mean, we've talked a lot about kind of general ideas, but I really would like to get to some specifics around your company and give you a chance to talk about your successes. Maybe there's a success story that you would love to share about, and you don't have to mention names, of course, unless you're just able to do that, but a success story that you've had in your practice that you're particularly proud of that illustrates some of the points we're talking about.
Yeah, let me, I know that there, yeah, and for this, I haven't reached out to my clients to ask them permission, so I'll keep the names out for just the sake of respect. But there's two examples. And the reason why I like to use these two examples is that, again, the same thing does not work for everyone, and the other reason I think that, this will resonate with some people is that they're both from kind of, industries that are blue collar, maybe the owners are quote unquote a little old school and not the typical, they're not technology companies that a lot of small businesses would say, oh, well, they're, Pinterest and Twitter, they're big tech companies and they can do remote work, but we can't because, we need boots on the ground. Right.
Right.
So the first company is a third party logistics company out of Massachusetts. Third-party logistics, for some of you that know, is kind of the middle person between trucking and the customer. And, if you need something shipped from one side of the country to the other side, they take in the order and they find the trucking companies in order for you to get your freight shipped. Real close friend of mine, and the challenge that they had was that, they had to, it was really difficult for them at first because it's a complete mindset change, and sales is tough, their sales situation I'll set up just like a lot of sales are. They were set up in a big room. They all had their cubicles. And especially when your manager is a manager that's in the trenches with the salespeople still doing sales, I actually absolutely love managers that are still doing the job of the people that they're supervising in a way, like, because it builds that sense of, hey, I'm there with you. Mm-hmm. And a lot can be missed though. Like now that they're not there in that workplace together, they could ask their manager questions. The other salespeople could ask their managers questions real quick. They got together for lunch. They built that team bond. It's really difficult. And again, the companies in that quote unquote, I don't want to say trucking industry because they're not trucking, but they're in that logistics industry. So it's real, in your face, hard work, blue collar type work. And so they had a difficulty, real, a lot of difficulty doing that. But the first thing that they did, or we did, was talk about how you need to schedule your trainings or your training time intentionally. So again, to avoid the Zoom fatigue, you don't want to set up a situation where you're like, hey, I need to talk to you right now. Hey, I need to do this right now, where you can do that before the tap on the shoulder. Basically, you have to shift from synchronous to asynchronous. Like, you're not working in real time, you're working asynchronously. So that mindset shift was really difficult for them in the beginning. But eventually, you know, my colleague, he started scheduling those training opportunities on a schedule. And now the person knew when those opportunities were coming up and they could actually do training. So scheduled training was really important. And then they shifted from really just, you know, again, it's a sales team. It was a small sales team. It was a sales team. They use the board for sales, you know, ring the bell, get amped up, high five when someone makes a sale.
Sure.
Well, that wasn't there anymore as much. Mm. So they had to kind of shift their measures of success from KPIs, key performance indicators, to OKRs. Like, okay, are you making that many calls? Are you reviewing the accounts? And things that they were able to check on without checking with the employee, right? So, oh, I need to talk to you, see how you're doing. Well, I just looked at you've been making the calls. So maybe there's something else in there. Oh, I noticed that you weren't looking at the CRM prior to making your calls. So there were other things that they implemented. So that's my one example from the third party logistics company, where they're fully remote, by the way. They decided to go fully remote because, you know, one, they're in Massachusetts and the cases were really high in that spot. So they've been operating fully remote, their team, since the outbreak.
Wow.
But another company, a trash and recycling company, again, kind of in that blue collar, this company is based out of Maine. And this is a situation where the founder started the company with one truck and was on the back of the truck throwing trash bags. In the back, and she's, you know, she's amazing and hard worker and a woman in the trash industry. So, Maine didn't have a lot of cases in relative compared to other places like here. So, you know, remote work really wasn't kind of a necessity for this company.
Mm-hmm.
But workplace flexibility became kind of a necessity. And the reason why is that, well, they still wanted to be safe. So they wanted to reduce the number of people in the office daily. So what we kind of helped them out with was, things like remote my PC, just simple tools like, you know, remoting into their PCs because they're on a closed network with their routing software and stuff like that. So it wasn't a situation where, you know, they all had laptops and stuff like that. But so we kind of helped them with that. Like, oh, let's find some software that a few of your people can kind of remote into and do that. Then we also implemented a chat feature on their website. So that's like another piece of technology that allowed them to interact with their clients instead of being on the phone. So somebody could be at home and kind of interact with their clients. And then the most important thing I think, you know, we did with them was help them develop a handbook that was easily accessible online. A lot of organizations, small businesses have a Word document that's their handbook and it never gets looked at. Now, you need a handbook with policies and procedures, right? And in that handbook, we kind of made it more of not a web page, but like a Google Doc that's private, but at least it's available so you can get to it when you're not in the office. But within that handbook, we really kind of laid out when, if you're going to work remotely, these are the times that you can work. These are the types of software that you can use and how to use them. And that's really, really important. Now, again, they didn't do this because they wanted to be fully remote. They wanted to offer some sort of remote work flexibility to reduce, you know, the number of people in the office, but it's also a disaster contingency plan. So that's something that's really, really serious that I kind of just wanted to end with as far as these two examples, is that as a small business, we've been able to learn how to operate in these times. Remote work is a great disaster contingency plan. You know, in the old entertainment business, an act of God they put in the contract. That's the only way you could get out of a concert. Just for some of you that don't know, if you're ever in the entertainment industry and you signed a writer, it would say at the bottom, the only way you could cancel this contract is an act of God, right? Well, we've seen a couple of those in the past year, years. The wildfires, West Coast, you have floods, you know, they just had a blizzard. So again, they didn't implement this for necessarily for COVID, but they had a huge blizzard up there recently and they were able to work remotely still. So those were two, I'm really proud of those two examples because they're not in the tech space. They're in that space that most people associate with hard blue collar work. And most people would say, nah, I mean, obviously the truckers have to still truck. I mean, I probably should have said that from the beginning.
Yeah.
The truckers still have to get in the truck and drive from one end to the other. You know, the recycling back end people still need to grab the totes and throw them in. So yes, there's a population of their business that can't necessarily work remotely, right? But there is a population that can, and that can still really help you operate your business even in times of uncertainty. So that's why I kind of wanted to list those two examples.
Yeah, those are great ones. And what I'm hearing out of this, emphasizing something you said earlier, that the whole remote work experience, I mean, yeah, there's a technology aspect to it, but it's just one aspect of a bigger issue, which is the people issue and how you address the people issue. And so those are two great examples of the points you made earlier. Kaleem, this has been great and I could keep going. But
thank you.
I think what's important at this point is to answer the most important question for folks, which is how they can get in touch with you and talk about their specific problems. So let's get to it. If you can share your coordinates, how folks can get in touch with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the first thing is, please go to blendmeinc.com. Again, that's blendmeinc.com. And just fill out the assessment. You just fill out the assessment just to see where you're at. And if you got a question, you can just go ahead and hit contact and fill out the form. And I've been doing a ton of speaking. So whether you just want to talk a little bit to kind of get an idea of where you're at, or if you want us to come in and do a workshop, we've been doing a lot of that. You can also find me and kind of follow me on social media and follow Blend on social media. So Blend Me Inc. everywhere on social media. And I am Kaleem Clarkson. That's K-A-L-E-E-M. C-L-A-R-K-S-O-N. And that's my handle pretty much everywhere. Twitter, LinkedIn, a little bit of Instagram. And you can find me in those places.
Awesome. Kaleem Clarkson has been with us, folks, with Blend Me Inc. Kaleem, this has been great. Thank you so much for being with us.
John, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Folks, now speaking of remote working, I want to talk to you about Office Angels. So Office Angels has been remote for 20 years, and they've got angels that fly in, get the job done for you on an as-needed or a ongoing basis. And those jobs include administrative tasks, bookkeeping, marketing. They've even got, if you're a speaker or prospective speaker and you want to get gigs booked, they can handle that. They've got a wide variety of tasks that they do for you and your business, so you can actually work on things that are productive for your business, not all these other details that need to get done, but you need somebody else to do them. So here's what my suggestion to you is. If you're shy, go to officeangels.us and check them out and do all that stuff. But what I really suggest you do is call the chief executive angel over at Office Angels, SES Gabito, Her number is 770-442-9246. That's 770-442-9246. And just explain what your problem is. And Essie will help you. And I am confident of that because I use her services. And I do that on an ongoing basis. She and her angels are awesome. They do a terrific job. And Essie is definitely the chief angel. So she's out to help her small business owners and customers. And I think you'll appreciate her if you give her a call. Folks, just a quick reminder that North Fulton Business Radio is on all the major podcast apps, even a bunch of the minor ones. We're out there on all these platforms. North Fulton Business Radio is the search term. And here's what I would appreciate if you would do. Go and find the show on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to the show, and give us a great review. And the great review equals 5 stars. And it's not about me. It's not about Business Radio X. We got plenty of listeners. It's about folks that are on our shows because we are interested in getting them exposure to people that might need their services. So if you could do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. And we would also love it if you connect with us on social media. North Fulton BRX is the handle. We're on Instagram, well, kind of barely Instagram, but more linked. Kind of like Kaleem, I think, right? Mostly LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter and, yeah, Instagram and probably a few more. I don't know. But North Fulton BRX is the search term, the name. Go find us on any of those social media outlets. So for my guest, Kaleem Clarkson, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.